The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
They are trying to basically use this as a cudgel over Daniel Snyder. The only way to ameliorate the situation in Washington, to fix it, the only way is for Daniel Snyder to sell the team.
Last week's vocabulary words, both cudgel and ameliorate. We haven't had one yet, but we still have plenty of time. Peter won't disappoint. It's a ritual every Friday at some point. Any kid out there studying for the SAT gets a little extra work, learns a new word, and who knows? That may be the difference between Harvard and not Harvard. Who knows? All right. Rule proposals. They are out, and they come in two waves, or at least this year they came in two waves. One, all the team proposals that got tucked into the late Monday afternoon hours, the first day of free agency and everything that was going on. And last night, late yesterday afternoon, the competition committee proposals get tacked on to the end. The biggest thing this year is what's not there. What's not there? What hasn't been proposed by any team and what hasn't been adopted, accepted, and recommended by the competition committee is a ban on what has become the strategic use of the rule that allows teammates to push the player with the ball into the rugby maul that we have seen the Eagles work to perfection, to the point where if you need 7 yards, you may be able to get it. The moving pile of bodies, we thought that would be taken out of the game. Peter, unless the owners decide to do it on their own, which is possible but not likely, it's staying in the game for 2023, and I suspect in this copycat league that is the NFL, we're going to see more teams than the Eagles doing it on a regular basis.
You know, two thoughts, Mike. Number one, at the scouting combine, talking to people around the league, I got this sense that if Roger Goodell and the competition committee, and I believe that overall, the combination of Roger Goodell and the 8 members of the NFL Competition Committee, which modify slash change rules every year, that the majority of people among those 9 believe that the rugby mall play, pushing the pile, has no place in football. But the only way that this group, the competition committee, was going to propose this is if it felt that it had a good chance to pass. And so for people to understand that and for people to say, well, geez, why wouldn't they just bring it up so there could be some debate? The debate has already been done. And so rather than draw the lines and get people hard and fast on one side or the other, and get the proponents of the mall play to, you know, like Howie Roseman, obviously Nick Sirianni, and obviously now many others. Mike, the reason why this wasn't brought up is because the competition committee, Roger Goodell, everybody who believes that this is not a good play for the NFL, either in appearance or safety, it's because they could not assure themselves that 24 owners would vote to overturn this rule and take it out of the game. So what does that mean? It means that there are at least 9 teams in the NFL, after surveying the landscape, after talking to GMs, coaches, owners, there are at least 9 teams that would have voted against it, a rules change. So why bring it up and harden positions and have people saying that, hey, over my dead body will this come out of the game, even though nobody would say exactly that. But the one other thing I would say, Mike, is that the NFL every year says, got to make the game safer, got to make the game safer. And yet your most valuable players, your most expensive players are in the middle of and will be in the middle more of. Watch this year. Watch Geno Smith in Seattle. Pete Carroll says he may now go for putting more of these in his playbook. Sean Payton, who obviously is going to do it. He has said he's going to do it. So now, Geno Smith, Russell Wilson, Jalen Hurts, okay? And you tell me right now, and again, I'm not trying to be a fearmonger, but this is a fact. Somebody's going to get hurt doing this. Somebody is going to get a separated shoulder. Look, if you've got 700 pounds of people behind you, and if you've got, remember the play in the Super Bowl, and I forget who it was, but you got a defensive tackle, it might have been Chris Jones, leaping over the pile to fly into and try to break up this wedge that Philadelphia was doing. That's a, let's say it's Chris Jones or whoever it was, a 300-pound projectile coming right at your quarterback. And let's say he doesn't hurt his shoulder. Let's say for some reason it gets helmet to helmet and he gets concussed. I simply cannot square in any way how the NFL talks about player safety all the time. And they're saying, we are going to put our most important players every week in the NFL at risk of injury because of a play that is not a football play. It's a football play now because they have made it a football play or allowed it to continue to be a football play. It's not what the people who invented this game, it is not what they envisioned. And I think it's just, I think it's a sad day for the NFL.
You make an excellent point. Well, several excellent points. I want to work backward. I think back to 10 years ago when between the Wildcat and the zone read and it was unstoppable and what happened? Defenses spent time focusing on how to stop this new unstoppable thing. And guess what? They came up with a way to neutralize it and then it lost its importance. Defensive coordinators are going to be coming up with strategies up to and including launching a 300-pound projectile right at the quarterback to keep other teams from doing this, to stop it, to slow it down. And at some point, somebody will get injured. If you have the quarterback as the guy who was caught in the middle of this massive humanity, at some point, it will result in an injury to the quarterback, and then that's when they'll decide they're going to get rid of it. I think back to how the rule came to be. It used to be you can't push, you can't pull the runner. In 2006, they took away the push part as a violation because it never got flagged. And it would happen spontaneously out in the open field from time to time. You'd see a lineman rush up from behind and give the guy a push, and nobody ever flagged it. So if they're never going to flag it, why have a rule against it? That's a far cry from teams realizing there's a strategic benefit to designing your plays in a way where the push is incorporated. And Peter, I don't know that this is something that I want to take credit for, that you and I should take credit for, but I remember back during the season when we talked about this on a Friday after the Eagles and the Texans played in Houston during the World Series, and we were just kind of riffing and having fun about the things teams could do. You put a Taysom Hill at quarterback. You put a defensive lineman at quarterback. You put two defensive linemen behind him, or defensive linemen, as the case may be. And you just you use the physics to your advantage. You could take this thing to the extreme. And it didn't quite happen that way. But after that, we started seeing more and more of this concerted effort. You see the guy go in motion who stops right behind the quarterback and pushes. You see the actual formation where there's three guys back there and they all just go straight for the quarterback and push him through. And the easy fix would be you can still push the runner outside the tackle box. That's the easy fix. And I have no idea why they're not even trying, why no team is even putting it on the table. I understand what you're saying about, well, they don't think they're going to have 24 votes, so they're not going to do it. Now, that presumes that every competition committee proposal gets passed, and they don't. So they must misread the room on other things about how many votes they're going to have. But any team can make the proposal. Any team that sees this as a negative can say, we don't think this is good for the game. We propose this change, and nobody did it. That's what's amazing to me. None of the 32 teams made a proposal to take that out of the game.
I agree with you, Mike, and you ask why the other things just get proposed. And I think the other things get proposed because in many cases, the competition committee legitimately wants to hear from ownership and from teams. What do you think of this? And I remember for years they had the, let's push the extra point back. Okay. And the reason that that was on the agenda every year is that I think the competition committee wanted open discussion about that, about the extra point, because it seems so obvious and they wanted to hear from the traditionalists who didn't want to change how the extra point was done, from the 2 yard line and put back to the 15. And in this particular case, I believe that one of the reasons is that positions might harden to the point that it would make it more difficult in the future. Plus, it's Mike, the other thing I should have said when we were discussing this, or I was making my point, is this. If the competition committee really wants something but doesn't propose it, many times it is because it isn't a unanimous feeling among the competition committee that this thing should be proposed. And in this particular case, I believe that there are a lot of teams in the NFL, a lot of teams who really admire what Nick Sirianni, Howie Roseman, the coaches, the staff of the Philadelphia Eagles have done. And it is sort of ingenious when you think about it. They took a rule and they took advantage of a rule. They did nothing wrong. This is not the Philadelphia Eagles basically saying, we are going to take advantage of a rule and do something that is borderline illegal. This is not borderline illegal. It is incredibly legal to do what the Eagles are doing. And so I think there is a sentiment, and I got this sense from two general managers at the scouting combine. Why would we punish the Eagles for having the brains and the wherewithal to think of something well within the rules to take advantage of a rule, honestly, and do something that really helps your team? So I think that's another part of it. I think people don't want to penalize the Philadelphia Eagles. But I do think at the end of the day,
they'll just send a 300-pound lineman at their quarterback's knees. That's what they'll do. We don't want to punish the Eagles for it, but we're going to send our biggest, baddest-ass defensive lineman straight at your quarterback. That's not consistent, Peter, but that's not consistent. Let's just get it out of the game. If If the teams instead are going to say, we're going to come up with a way to make you regret doing it, just get it out of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And Mike, to me, what Steve Spagnuolo, the defensive coordinator, and Joe Cullen, the defensive line coach of Kansas City, last year did when they sent a defensive tackle as a human projectile at the rugby mall and basically said, okay, you guys are going to keep running this. We are going to send a 300-pound guy flying through the air to try to stop it. Now, he didn't stop it, so maybe they'll spend time and maybe they'll still do it. But what I'm saying is the end result of this, and again, I do not wish this to happen. I will not be happy if it happens. But the end result is somebody's going to get hurt. And it might be a big star player. And only then, you know, it reminds me of the gun debate in our country. You know, we keep thinking, well, if it happened at Sandy Hook and we didn't do anything about it, then we'll never do anything about it. In this particular case, I think if it does happen to a quarterback, a starting quarterback in the NFL who is knocked out because of a separated shoulder or a severe concussion because of this, then and only then will the NFL change. And that, to me, is it's a sad commentary on the league, quite honestly.
Well, and it's not out of character, Peter. It's not. This is the way the NFL is. They are notoriously reactive, not proactive. It is amazing to me that right. For the amount of money that the people who are in these rooms are making and the expertise they supposedly have, they can't envision worst-case scenarios and engineer the rules around them. They're content to just let it ride, let it happen, and then when the crap hits the fan, oh, whoa, well, that's news to us. Oh, we had no idea. Well, we should change that rule. Well, what about everybody that was saying this is where it's going to lead? They do that with everything. They do it with everything. Yeah. That is one of the biggest organizational flaws. I mean, owners, you're going to give Roger Goodell a new contract. You should put a codicil on there. You need to hire somebody who is an expert in projecting risk, understanding the ways things can go bad, and coming up with ideas for avoiding those things, such as let's get rid of this rule before it wipes out a franchise quarterback in week one and scraps your whole primetime schedule for the balance of the year. Because now, instead of having one of the top five quarterbacks, you've got just some guy that was hanging around the sideline that has to go out and play quarterback now. So, look, it's going to go a lot of other ways, too. You're going to see creativity from guys like Sean Payton. You're going to see a demand for guys like Taysom Hill. You may see others, not just quarterbacks, who are out there taking the snap. I think part of the challenge now, the one upsmanship that coaches like to engage in, Peter, will include expanding the mind, coming up with different ways to take advantage of the fact that it's open season on putting the, you know, it's funny. It's the equivalent of, because every once in a while, you'll hear somebody say about hockey, like, why not just go out and get a giant to be your goalie who just takes up the whole space of the goal and just tell him to sit down, you know, or just get big giant skates so he can just sit there and the puck never gets through. I mean, this is the equivalent of that. Let's go get the biggest human beings and put them on our side of the line. It's like tug of war in reverse. We're going to have a massive humanity. One guy's going to have the ball and it's just going to move down the field. It's kind of funny, but it's also not fun to watch.
That's the thing. Who looks at these huge scrums of humanity, these huge rugby malls, as they're called in rugby? I was calling it a rugby scrum and got corrected about 17 times before I stopped calling it a rugby scrum. But who looks at these rugby malls and said, you know, I watch football to see two big people, a fullback and a tight end. I watch football to watch those guys push a quarterback against seven people on the defense trying to stop him until until you know somebody can stop the momentum of this. You know, where's the athleticism? There is no athleticism. All there is blunt force trauma. That's what it is. That is not what football is. Now, I know there are some people who say that, hey, look, you've got to control the line of scrimmage. And of course you do. And if you don't control the line of scrimmage, you're not going to win the game. I get that. This is different from controlling the line of scrimmage. This is basically playing push the pile until they make a rule that says we can't push the pile anymore. And you are going to see in 2023, three or four times the amount of pile pushing that you saw in 2022. It is not good for football.
Yeah, and next year at this time, if that happens, if there's an injury, if it just looks bad, if enough people complain, then the leaders of the sport, the stewards of the game, will exert the leadership that they failed to exert this year. And it's a failure of leadership to not have someone who was able. You know, we talk about what an agent can do for Lamar Jackson. A good leader can get the right people on board with the stuff you and I've been talking about for the past 20 minutes. It's not all that difficult. The concepts are not complicated, which is one of the reasons why I'm able to understand them. But it's an absence of leadership. And I point to the man whose name's on every football. The commissioner's the one who should have been pushing this through. He's the one who should understand how this can go badly for the game.
Totally.
How this can go badly for the league. How this can go badly for the networks when franchise quarterback gets smushed and can't play for the rest of the season. And, oh, they've got seven more primetime games. On that note, the ability to engineer around potentially bad primetime games, it's extending from Sunday to Monday, and now it may be extending to Thursday. We'll discuss that when this Friday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
That's how we look to support the digital platforms as well as the traditional linear platforms, which have been great to us and will continue to be great to us. But for us to reach fans that aren't on those platforms, we need to go into these other territories. And, Sam, you did also touch on scheduling, which I should. This is the first year of our new deals that we'll have flexible scheduling on Monday night. So we'll have flexible scheduling on Sundays and Mondays. It wouldn't at all surprise me at some point that we have it on Thursdays at some stage, but not today. But it will certainly be something that will be in our horizon.
Not today, but tomorrow. I mean, that was just 6 weeks ago. When I saw that quote yesterday, when it creates the impression this is like 5-7 years down the road. It's on our horizon, not today. But today, here we are. And it's funny, Peter, that's one of those things that when you go to a press conference as the person who's the one providing the information, as Roger Goodell was there at the annual pre-Super Bowl press conference, yes, you're there to answer questions, but sometimes there's points you want to make. And when you look at that now, that was just the way that we're all on notice of the possibility of Thursday night flex scheduling, because boom, here it is. As they prepare to convene in Arizona, the owners will be asked to vote on the question of whether flex scheduling will be available for Thursday night football this year, not next year, not next decade, year two of the Amazon experiment. The owners are going to be asked to vote. And as you were saying earlier, they wouldn't be asking if they didn't know they had 24. They're going to get Thursday night flex scheduling late in the season. Who cares? Hey, sorry, fans. You had season tickets for that Thursday night game. Not season tickets, but you had tickets to the game. You're going to fly in, stay with family, stay at the hotel, whatever. Not this time. That game's been moved to Sunday. Hope you can extend your stay. But they don't care about that. Once they crossed from Sunday to Monday, which they're doing this year, the message was, we don't care about the inconvenience to anyone. We care about maximizing viewership for our games.
Look, flexing games on Monday night is incredibly convenient anyway, because let's just say that there was a game at 1 p.m. Sunday that the NFL deems should be flexed now to Monday night. You tell me, people who have planned, as you said, when the schedule comes out, and you just gave me a great idea, I'm going to find fans, because I've heard from them over the years, who set up one road trip a year with all their pals, who set up one road trip a year, and they go to a game of their favorite team, the Packers, the Patriots, whoever it is, and they go to one game, and they agree to meet in Kansas City for a football game, and they make their hotel reservations, they get their plane ticket, they do all this stuff. And they do all this, and now, even as I say, on Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, now all of a sudden, you can't fly back from Kansas City on a 6 o'clock plane on Sunday. You've got to now fly on Tuesday morning, if you can even get a flight after, at a moment's notice, this schedule has changed. Think of the inconvenience for Thursday. You know, look, I understand that Amazon is paying a lot of money, and they don't want the Jets and the Jaguars on December 22nd. I get it. I understand it. But look, you're the one who decided that you wanted to spend $1 billion a year to get in this business of streaming one NFL game in primetime every Thursday per week. And you know what? If there's a horse crap matchup, if there's Panthers-Falcons in week 13, tough cookies. I mean, and look, I should say this, Mike. You and I, we work for NBC. NBC has always gotten the benefit of flex scheduling, and now it's expanding. But my point is, I would say nothing about this if you're flexing a game from Sunday at 1 o'clock to Sunday at 8:20, okay? That's just, you know, that's the way life goes. If you flex a game on the same day to a different time slot, I understand it's going to be inconvenient, but that's just the way it goes. But changing games in three-day increments from Sunday to Thursday, I mean, come on. That's, to me, it's utterly preposterous. It's unfair. And I'll tell you this, the first coach that has a game flexed from Sunday to Thursday, I want to hear, and he's got four guys on IR who are maybe not on IR, but who have four guys who are, you know, iffy about whether they're going to play the following Sunday. Well, they're definitely not going to play on Thursday. You tell me what that coach is going to say, if he's speaking the truth, instead of having to be a good little coach and shut up and support this stupid rule.
Well, supposedly they're going to have 15 days notice, but I don't think that's enough to plan for something like this.
It's not enough.
And as it relates to the fan issue, you know, they're trying to make Las Vegas into a destination. The whole idea, hey, you go for the weekend to watch the game. And you've got the possibility of, I thought the game was going to be Thursday, now it's Sunday, but I think it's even greater. And the risk is spread across the entire league, okay? Oh, we're going to Vegas this weekend. It's Chiefs Raiders. It's a huge game with significant postseason implications. And it's, you know, we're going for a Christmas trip or right before Christmas, and it's Sunday and the family's all going, and this is going to be great. Oh, shit, they moved the game to Thursday. Oh, because it's a better game than Jaguars. Well, it was such a great game, they moved it. They pulled the rug out from under us. So we got all this money spent. We've been waiting for months to do this, and now we can't do it, or we have to dramatically alter our plans. I got to get next week off work instead of this week off. Again, Peter, look, I'm in one of those moods today where I don't care. They want to complain about me. They do anyway. At least I'll give them something good to complain about. Show that you care about the fans, NFL. Show that you give one crap about the fans. This is the proof that they don't care about the people who show up and buy the tickets. They don't care about the people that
they
lure
in to
watch the games.
It's all about the fans. We love our fans.
Yeah. Yeah. Except when we want to cater to our fans that we would prefer to watch on the game on TV. They care more about the people who watch the game on TV because those are the numbers that drive the bus for these TV contracts, the next TV contracts. They got to prop up this streaming. The streaming is the horizon that arrives as quickly as the horizon arrives, the way that Roger Goodell used it pre-Super Bowl. It's here. And the big money is no longer going to be there from the networks. The big money is going to be there from the streamers. They got to make this work. I think that's the real takeaway here. And this may be my final show, and if it is, it's been a fun ride. This is where it's going. The networks are going to be minimized in the next wave of deals. It's the streamers, Amazon, Netflix. Do you think it's a coincidence that all of a sudden they got this major three-quarterback reality show where they follow them around on Netflix? All of a sudden they're in bed with Netflix when they hadn't done anything with Netflix? Same thing happened 7-8 years ago with Amazon. What's this? Oh, they're doing something with Amazon? They know. That's where they want to make this pie as big as they can. They got to go to streaming, and they got to help prop up Amazon. They got to make those numbers bigger. They got to make the games better. And they don't care if your trip to Las Vegas Christmas weekend has now been ruined with 15 days notice because the game you had paid tickets and flight and hotel to go see ended up being too good to stay on Sunday.
Mike, I want to, I'm not saying this happens all the time, okay, but I want to talk to you about one game this year, this past year. Remember when the 3-9 Rams played the 5-7 Raiders in a disastrous game that everybody thought was going to be a disastrous game? It's at SoFi, and you know Matthew Stafford's hurt, and the game is played, and all of a sudden, it provides far and away one of the five best dramatic moments of this year, of this entire season, in this game that between a 3-9 and 5-7 team. And the moment is Baker Mayfield, after being a member of the Los Angeles Rams for about 15 minutes, comes out and drives the Rams down the field and makes a gorgeous throw to win this game. And it's the one moment of salve on an ugly, wounded Los Angeles Rams season. But that's why I'm not saying that all of these games end up to be games that are must-see TV, because they don't. That's the problem. That's what happens when you have a 272-episode reality show called the National Football League. Sometimes games that look lousy become dramatic in some of the great moments of the year. And sometimes there's incredible games, 49ers-Cowboys, NFC playoffs. Everybody is looking forward to it. In the middle of the third quarter, everybody's asleep. But anyway, my whole point about this is you don't know what you're going to get. It's like the old Forrest Gump in the box of chocolates. And that's why the NFL is a great reality show. And to just categorically say that we are going to try our best to ensure that every game that Amazon has is a great game, to me, is just, first of all, they're not going to all be great games. That's the way life is sometimes. And I think it is incredibly disrespectful to the people who spend the money to go to your games to just try to service the however many million people, the 12 or 13 million people who are going to stream this game on their device at home or wherever they are.
I remember when Mark Cuban said, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I disagreed with him. I thought the NFL would never cross over into something like that, that that's a hog that gets as big as it wants to get. But this is the first move. Now that I've had 12 hours to think about it, because it just kind of dropped out of nowhere last night on Sports Business Journal, and I assume the NFL wanted it out there so people would at least have a heads up before the Thursday night flex scheduling just appeared out of the blue over the weekend or whenever they do the vote. This is the first time that I'm concerned that the hog's going to get slaughtered, because this is too much. This is a bridge too far. We haven't even talked about the biggest problem with this. And I think back to the opinion Richard Sherman used to have before he was getting a paycheck from Thursday Night Football. Back when he was a player, he called Thursday Night Football a poop fest, in large part because you expect players to turn around and play with only Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off between games. Well, now, with flex scheduling for Thursday night, because they had come to terms with it by saying one team, one time a year, one time per team. Now you're going to have multiple teams that have to play Sunday, then Thursday in the same season. That defies the justification that they ultimately realized would work. We're never going to impose on any team more than once. Every team's got to do it once a year. The Cowboys have been doing it every year on Thanksgiving. Why are you complaining? Quit whining. Quit whining. Just suck it up and do it. Well, now you're going to be looking at twice. As you get closer to the playoffs, think about it. They're not going to be picking the worst teams to play on 3 days rest, 3 days off between games, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, late in the season. They're going to be picking the best teams. So as you are making your push for the playoffs and you need everything you can for January, oh, remember that thing you did back in September where you had to play on Sunday and then play on Thursday? You got to do it again. Suck it up and do it, because it's all in the name of the greater good.
Mike, as you were saying that, I thought, I believe this is right. It may not be, but I think there was only one team this past year that had the double Thursday night game on a short week. There, now, keep in mind, the NFL has kind of ingeniously had some teams play two Thursdays in a row, but they're not short week games. Like, for instance, last year, the Buffalo Bills played at Detroit Thursday afternoon, and then the following Thursday, they had a game against the Patriots as part of the Amazon package on Thursday night. But because they had played the previous Thursday, and they do this with Dallas a lot, because they had played the previous Thursday, that's still only one short week Thursday night game. But in this particular case, the danger is, as you say, some of your best players in the league and a lot of your players in the league are going to be asked, let's say they flex two of these in a season, even if they only flex one, but let's say they flex two of them. You're absolutely right. Can you imagine, like, in the span of 6 weeks, telling Andy Reid that he's got to play two games on Thursday night? Can you imagine telling, I mean, Jerry Jones would love it, I think. But telling Mike McCarthy that he's got to get his beat-up Cowboys ready to play twice in a short week within a 6 or 7 week period. Because keep in mind, Mike, these are late-season games, okay? So if you do it with, say, the Dallas Cowboys or anybody who plays on Thanksgiving, there's six teams that play on Thanksgiving, and the NFL every year wants those six teams to be attractive matchups. You know, to be there's some really good teams who play on Thanksgiving. And now the Black Friday game. So imagine if you've got a Black Friday game, and whoever you are, and if you have a Black Friday game, and then you're going to have another short week game beyond that. It's like we were talking about a few minutes ago when we were talking about they're not going to bring up a rule, or they're not going to bring up a rules change for the rugby mall. Okay. It's the exact same thing. The NFL is going to talk endlessly in the coming months, because it always does, about player safety and how we care about players. And every 10 minutes, Roger Goodell says, hey, it's all about the fans. It's all about the fans. Okay. This, as you say, it's all about the TV viewers. That's what it's about. That's exactly what it's about in this story. It is not about the people who buy the tickets and support the product paying out of their own pockets, because now you're going to have to cancel this trip that you've made, or, you know, do something to this trip that you never intended for. So this thing where it's always about the fans, it's not about the fans. It's about the people who watch the game on TV. And why don't you just say it? Say it. Say it's about the people who watch the game on TV, not about the people who go to your stadiums, because it isn't.
Football is family. Sorry that you were planning to take your family to Las Vegas for a Christmas trip, and we yanked the game out from under you as you had your plan trip ready to go. I think I may have found Roger Goodell's burner on Twitter. This is Jeff Rowan 10S. Come on, guys. Enough with the crocodile tears over the live fans. There are such things as refunds. With 2 weeks' notice, folks can get their money back, and it's a reasonable trade-off. On balance, Thursday flex scheduling is good for the game. Is it, though? Is it, though? Is everything that grows the pot, that results in more money, because that's what this is all about. Yeah, I'd like to watch a great game on Thursday night. I'd rather watch a great game than a crap game. I would. But if you're going to have all the things we've discussed, all these factors to balance that out, you know, sometimes, and like you said, Peter, Rams-Raiders ended up being a good game. Jets-Jaguars wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's still football. It's on TV, and we can watch one game at a time. And that's where I think this is going. We need to take a break. But that's, and hopefully we'll be back after the break. That's where this is going. We're eventually going to have Monday night. Eventually we're going to have Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Sunday night, every week. And all the other inconvenience and flex scheduling for all. They're going to make the schedule for these games. Hopefully you and I live long enough to see this. And maybe it's on the horizon, which means maybe it'll happen by 2024. They're going to make the schedule as they go. They're going to have week 15 games, and you'll find out which games Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And eventually they'll find a way to play on Friday and Saturday during that 3-month window when the broadcast antitrust exemption prevents them from televising games on Fridays and Saturdays. I figure that's a matter of time before they pull some strings in Congress and make that go away, to have the NFL a 7-day-a-week proposition, standalone games, and who cares if it's inconvenient for the fans? Who cares if it's not good for the players? It's good for the great Mamu, the pursuit, of the endless growth of the NFL's financial interests. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. And there is a chance we won't be back. There is a chance that there will be alternative programming after this commercial break. Stick around and find out. If you do, and if we're here, you'll find out where Ezekiel Elliott would like to play in 2023. So, Ezekiel Elliott wants to wear number 15. Tyreek Hill says go to the Chiefs. Okay. Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott has made
it clear
that he does want to change his jersey from 21 to 15. You know, it took me a few seconds to get that. I'm thinking that Tyreek Hill wears number 10. Oh yeah, the Chiefs wear number 15. Patrick Mahomes wears number 15 for the Chiefs. Sometimes these jokes are very good, but my brain is relaxed like Rocky Balboa's, and I don't get them right away. It took me a few seconds. So, Ezekiel Elliott. He wants to wear number 15, but for who will he wear it other than the Chiefs? Now, this was odd the way it happened yesterday. It was reported, and if you look at the report, it was very carefully written to never come out and say that the Eagles, the Jets, or the Bengals had made offers to Ezekiel Elliott. It was couched as Elliott wants to play for one of three teams, the Bengals, the Jets, or the Eagles. Okay, that's fine. But none of those teams, as far as I can tell, want him. Zach Taylor, here he is. Let's listen to Zach Taylor from last night. Addressing.
I love this Zach Taylor.
That Ezekiel Elliott's.
It's great.
Ezekiel Elliott's three teams that he wants to play for are the Bengals, the Jets, and the Eagles. Here's Zach Taylor. Basically, that's news to me. Have a listen.
There's a lot of great players that are available right now. We like our team as where it's at right now. But, you know, it's always funny when things get thrown around. Sometimes it's the first you hear of it. But that's just the way life works.
So sometimes it's the first you hear of it. Yeah. And you know what? At least one of the other teams on that list reacted the same way. And my understanding is none of those three teams have made an offer or intend at this point to make an offer, or maybe at any point, to Ezekiel Elliott. So back to what we talked about in seg one, this is what happens when you have a good agent. This is how a good agent stirs the pot. This is how a good agent sparks the market. You talked in the past about how if Lamar Jackson had an agent at the scouting combine, he'd be working all the angles, talking to all the people, pulling in favors, getting things done. The media is part of that too. The agent calls up a reporter and stirs it up and gets it out there. And it really isn't. When you read the article at ESPN.com, it never says those teams are interested. It's brilliantly couched. There's never a misrepresentation that the Bengals, Jets, or Eagles actually want Ezekiel Elliott. This is Ezekiel Elliott's Christmas list. He's on Santa's lap saying, I want to play for the Bengals, the Jets, or the Eagles. Never mind the fact that none of those teams want me. That's what I want. And so it gets his name out there. It gets teams to maybe pay attention to him. And it gets somebody to possibly offer him the contract he's yet to see, Peter.
You know, Ezekiel Elliott, I think, is feeling what so many running backs in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years have felt. He's a good NFL running back. There was a time early on in his career where he had a great impact, you know, in the game. But the last couple of years, he's been a good NFL running back who wasn't the best running back on his own team. Tony Pollard was. So now he gets free. And in his age 28 year, is looking for a contract, and he wants to play for a contender for a really good team. So what was said and what was written and all that stuff is logical. It gets his point across. I want to play for a contender, and I'm still an impact guy. Well, he can want whatever he wants. But the fact is, no one really gives big second contracts. And again, look, I'll say this. Miles Sanders got what, Mike? 4 years, $24 million? That's a nice NFL contract, okay? But you would think that a guy like Miles Sanders, who is whatever he is, 25, 26 maybe, you would think that Miles Sanders coming off, you know, the couple of years he's had in Philadelphia might do a little bit better than that. But running backs have very simply become devalued because so many of them come out every year. And if you were a team, why wouldn't you say, if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, you're Howie Roseman, he's a smart guy, why wouldn't you say, hey, listen, we've got Kenneth Gainwell, who came out of nowhere. We got Boston Scott, who came out of nowhere. I'm forgetting one. But basically, we're doing fine with guys who are making $2 million a year on the cap. And you know what? We'll draft another one this year, and we'll continue. We'll keep the line moving. But we are not spending $6 or $7 million a year on a position that we know that history says. You know, Kenneth Gainwell had a 100-yard game in the playoffs. And you know, so we know that we can do better by, or at least as good, by simply paying guys at a low rate of pay. I mean, look, I feel bad for running backs, but that's just sort of right now the law of the land in the NFL. Running backs kind of get screwed. And if you're Ezekiel Elliott, I think what you're going to have to do is do a contract for 1 year for a low base, let's say $3 million, whatever it is, and which I'm sure is going to make him blanch, and then do extraordinary, you know, incentives for the contract. If I were him, that's what I'd be looking to do.
But you're right, Peter, and this is something Chris Sims and I have been talking about a lot lately. Running back position, Austin Eckler, he's dismayed at the fact that the Chargers won't pay him. They've given him an opportunity to shop himself in trade. It's not like anybody is rushing to sign Austin Eckler to acquire his rights and to pay him the kind of money he's looking for. Eight-figure salaries for running backs are becoming more and more rare, and it's no surprise or coincidence that there are multiple guys out there now with $10 million or more in salary this year that have questions. Derrick Henry, is he going to be traded? Dalvin Cook, is he going to be traded? What's going to happen with Joe Mixon in Cincinnati? What's going to happen with Alvin Kamara in the Saints? All of them have eight-figure or more, or not, somewhere above $10 million as their contract for the year. And it's no coincidence either that Tony Pollard, the guy who takes over for Ezekiel Elliott, signed his franchise tender yesterday to prevent it from being yanked by the Cowboys if they would maybe draft somebody much cheaper. Ezekiel Elliott, it has to factor in. He's made great money the past few years. His $12 million plus last year, because of his contract structure, he never would have gotten. They would have cut him a year ago. His contract structure had that money guaranteed in 2021 for 2022. That was a brilliant device. But now it's done, and he's got to accept the fact that the money's just not going to be out there for him or other veteran running backs with great name recognition. Let's take a break. Rookie quarterback Bryce Young, pro day workout yesterday. How did he do? Peter and I will talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
I've been this size my whole life. I had definitely didn't shrink any time recently. And, you know, I'm comfortable with myself. You know, I'm confident in my abilities. I know what I can do. And, you know, again, there's stuff that's out of my control. But, you know, at the same time, again, I know myself. I feel like I played in the highest conference in the college level. And, you know, I think that's prepared me. So, you know, I'm super excited for this next challenge. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of hard work. But, you know, it's something I'm ready for and I'm excited for.
I will say this. If Bryce Young has been that size his whole life, let's hope the epidural worked at birth. We get the point. We get the point.
Nice.
He is what he is. He's 5'10 and 3/8, 5'10 and 1/8, 204 pounds at the scouting combine. And yeah, this is a point Sims made right after the combine. He shows up at the combine, doesn't work out, and he's 204. Pro day, he works out, he doesn't get back on the scale. He's not 204. He doesn't play at 204. There haven't been many quarterbacks in the NFL who have played under 200 pounds. We've had so much focus on Tua Tagovailoa, him getting thrown around, lands on the ground, helmet hits the turf, concussion, concussion, concussion. That's a concern with Bryce Young, and it's a little hocus-pocus here. They're trying to conceal what he really weighs when he plays, Peter, but I would bet a lot of money it's under 200 pounds.
Oh, I would too. And that shouldn't be surprising. And honestly, would you really want your quarterback to put on weight simply for appearance sake? Or should he weigh what makes him the most comfortable to play the sport of football? And Mike, I don't know how it's going to go at the top. My gut feeling, just a guess, is that it goes C.J. Stroud to Carolina and then Bryce Young to Houston. But I think that most people who have watched tape, a lot of tape on Bryce Young, think that not that the size is no factor, but come away more encouraged that the size isn't as much of a factor as they thought it would be when they started watching multiple games on tape. You know, as one NFL offensive coordinator told me, on a team that, let's just say, is in the market for a quarterback, said to me, listen, you don't see a guy who's really affected by the size because he doesn't get many passes batted down, and he's not making the body motions that make you think that I can't see. So I don't think that when this decision is made, I'm sure if Carolina picks C.J. Stroud over Bryce Young, Carolina will say all the right things and everything, and I'm sure deep in the back of their minds they will say, well, part of it is the size, but I don't think it's going to be an overwhelming part of this decision. That's just my gut feeling.
Well, the offensive linemen and defensive linemen at the college level are every bit as big as they are at the NFL level. They've been that size their whole life, too. And so if you don't struggle to see through and around the guys who are in front of you, either trying to get you or trying to protect you, if you have no issues with it at the college level, you'll be fine at the NFL level. But there is a risk there. And I think it's more about the weight than the height, because we have this seared into our memory, Tua last year, three different times. I know only two of them officially were concussions. One unofficially, I think anyone with common sense believes it was a concussion, but it's not from getting a helmet hit. It's from being knocked to the ground and having that head snap back because the physics just aren't on your side if you're south of 200 pounds and you're being hit by guys who weigh 250, 270, 300 and more. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, a very tall quarterback who currently is not a quarterback has a new venture that maybe will lead him back to the field. Who knows? We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Hey guys, what's up? I got really special news to share today. I'm excited to announce I'm going to become part of the Las Vegas Aces organization. It was a matter of time before I was back in a building with some of the greatest athletes in the world. And I grew up with three older sisters. They were all incredible athletes in their own right. They were role models to me. It's where my love of women's sports began. I tagged along. I was the annoying little brother to all their games. And they were the best athletes in our house. And they're still a great inspiration to me. So I admire all the work the Aces players and staff and what the WNBA continues to do to grow the sport and to empower the future generations of female athletes, I have in my own family, and I'm ready to contribute in any way possible as a member of such a great organization. What an honor. I can't wait to watch these amazing, talented players bring another championship to Las Vegas. LFG.
LFG. Far better than FTX for Tom Brady at this point. Sorry, I couldn't resist. Hopefully this venture with the Aces goes better than his whole FTX thing. Now he's a minority owner of the WNBA team owned by Mark Davis, the Raiders owner. And it was just last summer when Dana White, the UFC president, was saying how close Davis came to bringing Tom Brady to the Raiders, and it was John Gruden who put the kibosh on it. And look, I don't think this means anything, but I still think Tom Brady has no idea what he's going to want to do this football season until football season gets closer. He now officially has a business partnership with the guy who owns the Raiders, Peter.
I mean, clearly this is something that is going to be in Brady's tool belt because, look, you've seen a lot of high-profile, very highly paid players like Patrick Mahomes get involved in team ownership. Patrick Mahomes and his wife are involved in team ownership with the women's soccer team in Kansas City. And he, I don't know if his wife is involved with the Kansas City Royals, but he's also a minority partner in the Royals. So this is just the next step for Tom Brady in whatever his life becomes. I don't believe that it has any bearing on whatever he does in football. And by the way, I will go on record as saying I don't think Tom Brady will take another snap. We'll see what happens, but I think this is the permanent sight we're going to see of Tom Brady announcing various things and him doing other things than throwing a football for a living again.
I think that he thinks he's done as of March 24. I think there's a chance he's going to feel differently as we get closer to football season, much like Brett Favre felt differently as he got closer to the 2008 football season. There's just something about standing on the brink of the reality that the train is going to keep rolling without you, without the GOAT, and he's still capable of playing. That's the thing. He's not walking away because of injury. He's not walking away because Father Time has won. He's walking away because he's choosing to while he can still play. Jim Gray asked him that a few months ago on his Let's Go podcast. You said you would retire when you suck. You don't suck. Why are you retiring? And he said, and Peter, I don't know if you and I have had this conversation, but this is the ultimate safe harbor for lying. This is even better than Costanza's "It's not a lie if you believe it." What Brady said was, "I believed it when I said it." That's powerful. I believed it when I said it. Well, you can use that for anything. So when he does unretire, if he does, and I, you know, I'm kind of having fun with it. I would like for him to play because he's good for our business. But all he has to say is, when I retired, when I said I was done, I believed it when I said it.
I just can't imagine that, especially with, look, I don't know where, I assume that, you know, his two children are living in the Miami area.
Miami.
I would be very, very surprised if he up and moved to pick a team, that isn't the Miami Dolphins, and who knows? I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he would be cognizant of the fact that this would be the ultimate waffle, and I just don't think he wants to do that. I really think he wants to move on with life, as painful for him as I'm sure this new life is, because it has been so disrupted in the last year.
And look, I agree with you, but we keep hearing these stories from time to time. Most recently, Ben Roethlisberger talked to the 49ers last year when they were in need. Guys will get injured. Will a phone
that was
call
weird.
Be made? What will he say? How will he feel at the time? That's the thing. How he feels now versus how he'll feel at the time, we don't know, and more importantly, he doesn't know. I do know this. We need to take a break. We'll wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live right after this. League meetings start this weekend, and one of the questions is the status of Daniel Snyder. Will he sell? Are they secretly lining everything up and they're just going to drop it out of the sky on us next week? Peter, I think there's a chance. There's been enough indications. I don't know this. But with a guy like Daniel Snyder, I think it makes sense to get all the paperwork signed, every I dotted, every T crossed, and have no way he can back out, and then just boom. Wouldn't that be something if in Arizona, it's just out of the blue, Snyder's out, and insert name of new owner is in?
I hear no, Mike, but I hear no from a person who says that you never know. But it has been very, very quiet around the Aaron Rodgers thing and around the Washington Commanders sale thing.
And the word in the building in Washington is sale is imminent. We'll find out what imminent means. Maybe we'll find out by early next week. Thanks for some of your time. Enjoy the weekend. See you Monday.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.